content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payden for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Associated Press and the Religion News Service. Our first article was published by the Associated Press on December 17 and is entitled, Convent-Made Delicacies, a Christmas Favorite, Help Monks and Nuns Win Fans and Pay the Bills. Mexico City. It's the fortnight before Christmas, and all through the world's Catholic convents, nuns and monks are extra busy preparing the traditional delicacies they sell to a loyal fan base, even in rapidly secularizing countries. For many monastic communities, especially those devoted to contemplative life and with vows of poverty, producing cookies, fruitcakes, even beer for sale is the only means to keep the lights on. But it's also an enticing way to strengthen their ties with lay people who flock to their doors, and in some cases their websites, in the holiday season. Our kitchen is a witness to God's love to those outside, said Sister Abigail, one of the 10 cloistered nuns of the Perpetual Adorers of the Most Blessed Sacrament in Mexico City. We are in the Lord's presence, and we're always thinking that it will help make someone happy, the person who will eat this, or they will gift it, and someone will receive it with joy, added the sister, whose convent makes sweets, eggnog, and its bestseller, tamales. Most monasteries have to be financially self-sufficient. Many in countries like Spain have to maintain not only an aging, shrinking cohort of monks and nuns, but also monumental, centuries-old buildings, said Fermín Labarja, a professor of church history at the University of Navarra in Pamplona. Since the small-scale farming with which they supported themselves for centuries stopped being profitable decades ago, most have turned to crafts, including the wildly popular gourmet food production that uses only homemade ingredients and recipes passed down generations. An immense majority of people goes to buy the nun's sweets, said Pipa Algara, who in her 90 years in the southern Spanish city of Granada has come to know each of the dozens of convent specialties. Among the oldest is alfajor, a cookie with roots dating back more than 1,000 years when this region was a Muslim kingdom, while this year's novelty is sushi rolls introduced by Filipino sisters. As a cloistered order, the 14 poor Clare sisters in Carmona, Spain, have to work to earn their daily bread, in their case, making some 300 English cakes and 20 other kinds of sweets a month to sell at their 15th century convent turnstile, said the abbess, Veronica Zula. There's a summer slowdown when southern Spain is so sweltering, nobody takes coffee breaks with cookies, Zula quipped. But the production revs up for Christmas, as the sweets are also sold at a special market devoted to convent products in nearby Seville. While we work, we pray the rosary, and we think of the people who will eat each sweet, said Zula. She learned the recipes from older sisters after arriving more than 20 years ago from Kenya, like all but one of the current sisters. Most nuns and monks involved in preparing the delicacies are quick to point out that their main mission is to pray, not to cook, and that doing both involves finding a delicate balance. We brew to live. We don't live to brew, said Brother Horace, who supervises the brewery at St. Sixtus Abbey in West Velleren, Belgium. There needs to be equilibrium between monastic life and economic life. We don't want to end up as a brewery with a little abbey on the side. For that reason, production remains limited even though the beer brings the monks only income, and it's considered by connoisseurs one of the choicest brews in the world, especially popular as a Christmas and Father's Day gift. Monks started making it in the 1830s to supply lay workers building the abbey with the daily pint their contract guaranteed. Aficionados still come to the Abbey or its cafe to get their crate, giving the contemplative order a chance to bear witness too. By simply existing, we remind people they're still here, Brother Horace said. A fellow Trappist at the Abbey of Gethsemane in Kentucky, where the renowned monk and author Thomas Merton once lived, similarly said that producing their bourbon-infused delicacies is just a part of the ora et labora, work and pray commitment, under St. Benedict's rule. Our ideal is to pray always, said Brother Paul Kwan, who joined the Abbey in the late 1950s when the bourbon fruitcake was already being produced, and has worked on the more recently introduced bourbon fudge. The Abbey now makes some 60,000 pounds per year of each, most sold between Thanksgiving and Christmas, when the bakery is so busy that silent prayer becomes a challenge. It's not the purpose of our life, lest we break the equilibrium. Rather, it's to turn work into prayer, said the abbess, Alamunde Villajero. When I'm working, I pray that these sweets may be catalyst of union and peace in the house or office where they will go. Following the same recipe dating from the late 1700s, the nuns made their signature almond cake known as Tarta de Santiago. A few decades ago, local women would bring ingredients to the convent so the nuns could bake cakes in their wooden oven. Today, pilgrims from around the world who have finished their Camino in the magnificent cathedral across the square are among the crowds ringing the bell by the nuns' simple wooden turnstile. The turnstile puts in touch the interior world with the exterior. They're not disconnected, LaBarja said. Back in Mexico City, the sisters preparing their popular Christmas buñuelos, a sort of flat donut made with flour, water, and cinnamon, also connect their community labor with their faith. During the Advent season, they pray thousands of Hail Marys as they roll the dough or cover the sweets with sugar. This is how we live the liturgy, Sister Abigail said. This is the objective in our work, and work for people outside the convent, that we feed them, and they help us so that we can eat. Now an article from the Associated Press, published on December 15, entitled, Santa Saves Iowa Nativity Scene from Removal Over Constitutional Concerns. Toledo, Ohio. A Santa figure saved an Iowa fire department's nativity scene from being shut down following complaints that the display might violate the U.S. Constitution. The display in the central Iowa city of Toledo was moved to a retired firefighter's nearby lawn last week after an atheist group raised concerns that the Christian depiction at the public fire station violated the First Amendment's prohibition on government agencies favoring one religion over others, Cedar Rapids station KCRG-TV reported Friday. The U.S. Supreme Court in 1984 ruled that manger scenes are allowed on government property, depending on the context of the display during the Christmas season and whether they have a secular purpose. During a city council meeting Monday, fans of the 15-year-long nativity tradition at the Toledo Fire Department pitched adding a Santa figure to keep the display on public ground. The city confirmed that the nativity scene, plus Santa, is back up at the station. Eastern Iowa atheist founder Justin Scott said he's satisfied. I don't believe there's any ill intent by the city of Toledo, Scott told Des Moines station KCCI-TV. I think it was just something that was nice. It was a nice gesture by a nice family. They put it up, and nobody bothered to notice that it was actually a constitutional violation. Now an article published by the Associated Press on December 18, entitled, Pope Approves Blessings for Same-Sex Couples If the Rituals Don't Resemble Marriage, Rome. Pope Francis has formally approved allowing priests to bless same-sex couples with a new document explaining a radical change in Vatican policy. By insisting that people seeking God's love and mercy shouldn't be subject to an exhaustive moral analysis to receive it. The document from the Vatican's Doctrine Office, released Monday, elaborates on a letter Francis sent to two conservative cardinals that was published in October. In that preliminary response, Francis suggested such blessings could be offered under some circumstances if they didn't confuse the ritual with the sacrament of marriage. The new document repeats that rationale and elaborates on it, reaffirming that marriage is a lifelong sacrament between a man and a woman. And it stresses that blessings should not be conferred at the same time as a civil union, using set rituals, or even with clothing and gestures that belong in a wedding. But it says requests for such blessings should not be denied full stop. It offers an extensive definition of the term blessing in Scripture to insist that people seeking a transcendent relationship with God and looking for His love and mercy should not be subject to an exhaustive moral analysis as a precondition for receiving it. Ultimately, a blessing offers people a means to increase their trust in God, the document said. The request for a blessing, thus, expresses and nurtures openness to the transcendence, mercy, and closeness to God in a thousand concrete circumstances of life, which is no small thing in the world in which we live. It added, "It is a seed of the Holy Spirit that must be nurtured, not hindered." The Vatican holds that marriage is an indissoluble union between man and woman. As a result, it has long opposed same-sex marriage. And in 2021, the Vatican's Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith said flat out that the Church couldn't bless the unions of two men or two women because God cannot bless sin. That document created an outcry. One, it appeared, even Francis was blindsided by, even though he had technically approved its publication. Soon after it was published, he removed the official responsible for it and set about laying the groundwork for a reversal. In the new document, the Vatican said the Church must shy away from doctrinal or disciplinary schemes, especially when they lead to a narcissistic and authoritarian elitism, whereby instead of evangelizing, one analyzes and classifies others, and instead of opening the door to grace, one exhausts his or her energies in inspecting and verifying. It stressed that people in irregular unions, gay or straight, are in a state of sin, but it said that shouldn't deprive them of God's love or mercy. Thus, when people ask for a blessing, an exhaustive moral analysis should not be placed as a precondition for conferring it, the document said. Now an excerpt from the Religion News Service, an article published on November 30 and written by Adele M. Banks, entitled "Jesus Film Producers Plan Release of New Animated Version in 2025. Washington. Jesus Film Project is producing an animated Jesus film that is set to release in theaters around Christmas 2025. Do you realize that there are more people in the world today who have little to no knowledge of Jesus than ever before in history? Asked Pastor David Platt, an international missions expert who spoke at the announcement of the new movie at the Museum of the Bible in Washington on November 30. When project staffers joined animators and supporters. What an opportunity we have to use a medium that God has ordained to reach not just people, but the next generation with the gospel, said Platt. Similar events announcing the film were held in South Korea and Uganda. The original Jesus film was released in 1979 by an evangelical Christian organization now known as CREW. It has been translated into more languages than any other movie, according to the Guinness World Book of Records. The 2,100th translation was recently completed. Josh Newell, executive director of Jesus Film Project, said he views animation as a fitting means to speak to younger generations about the life of Jesus. Animation is a compelling way to tell stories, he said in an interview ahead of the event. There's a moral resonance that people have with the story of Jesus, that what he teaches is good and true, and is relevant for kids and for families. The new film's director, Dominique Carolla, who has worked on films such as The Lion King and Mulan, said the animators are working closely with historical experts to depict the faces and clothing of characters living in the time of Jesus, including Jesus himself. Now, an opinion piece that was published by the Religion News Service on December 15, written by Phyllis Zagano, Inconvenient Truths at Christmas Time. It is Christmas. In peaceful towns, Santa Clauses smile from storefronts as carols fill the air. Children make their list and send letters to the North Pole. Elsewhere, the world is exploding. There is no Christmas in Gaza this year, and celebrations are canceled in Bethlehem as well. Ukrainian cathedrals may hazard midnight mass, but there is no Christmas truce in sight. There are other wars, smaller wars, with less world media focus. Innocent people are in danger in Afghanistan and Ethiopia, in Haiti, and in Nigeria. There's fighting in Syria, Somalia, Sudan, and at least a dozen or more other countries. Refugees roam the globe, hoping for a safe harbor. They may land in Lampedusa or end up in Turkey or the U.S. They have no food, no clothing, nothing but the hope of a future without bombs. They are not looking for more or bigger or newer anything. The displaced people who roam the globe are looking for food and freedom, and most of all, for peace. The United Nations estimates some 35.3 million refugees are among the 108 million displaced persons in the world, and those numbers are more than 1 year old. Not long ago, Pope Francis spoke about a different kind of freedom to the people not threatened by war, to the people with credit cards at the ready to buy whatever strikes a fancy. He spoke about a freedom that feeds the soul and brings interior peace. He told of a place where individuals are freed from the superfluous, from the pain of wanting what is unnecessary. Francis said you can only find that peace in silence. He said freedom is necessary from what he called the pollution of vain words and chatter. He said that it is essential. So where is that place in this world? TikTok has over 1 billion users. It's been downloaded more than 4 billion times. The social media platform X, formerly known as Twitter, boasts some 372 million users, and it ranks only 15th in the world. Among and in between, there are Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Snapchat, Reddit, and too many others to count. Some lean far left or right. Some, too many actually, present the fake news we know too well, along with large doses of vitriol. Only the media are new. The old standbys of anger, envy, gluttony, greed, lust, sloth, and pride are always available. One, more, or all can move easily into the mind and heart. The noise covers their footsteps. The noise destroys the silence and any possibility for reflection, thought, and calm discussion. It seems civility has left the planet. Witness the recent grilling of three Ivy League university presidents by Representative Elise Stefanik, Republican of New York, who demanded loudly they answer her with a simple yes or no, refusing to consider that after 2 hours, they might be worn out from constant questioning. The content of the discussion is not at issue here. The loud lack of respect is. In microdoses around the world, the same demeaning conduct rails, whether in vulgar late-night television or in political memes from either side of any race. It is no wonder civilization seems on the edge of collapse. Which brings us back to Santa Claus, who benevolently promises happiness. In most places, he has taken center stage and pushed the creche and the menorah off to the side. There are too many hurting people frightened today. Can we not quietly and with respect focus on their needs this season and discard the noise and disrespect that fuels the wars large and small? Can we not seek peace? Our last article is in some ways a response to that one. It was published by the Religion News Service and written by Knox Thames on December 15. He is a senior fellow at Pepperdine University, leaning into the hope of Advent when the world feels so dark. The Advent season reminds Christians of the time between a promise and its realization. Coming from the Latin term Adventus, for arrival, Advent traditionally refers to the 4 weeks leading up to Christmas in liturgical calendars. It is a time of hopeful anticipation, preparation, and waiting for the celebration of the birth of Jesus Christ. But with the world witnessing unrelenting human rights abuses, atrocities, and persecution, promises of peace on earth seem far away. What insights does Advent offer regarding our current circumstances? Human rights advocates are experiencing a painful purgatory of in-betweenness. Revolutionary standards and benchmarks defending the human dignity have been achieved, but they're often honored in the breach. Certainly, the effort to defend persons from persecution has made unprecedented gains since the horrors of World War II. In fact, December 10 recently celebrated Human Rights Day, commemorating the passage 75 years ago of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Rising from the ashes of the Holocaust, the Universal Declaration recognized individuals as rights holders and nations as duty bearers to protect those rights, reordering the relationship between people and their governments. But since the passage of the landmark document, violations have continued. That's not to say the Universal Declaration and the treaties that followed are worthless. Quite the contrary. These documents offer hope and chart a path to a brighter future. The Declaration and succeeding human rights conventions established universal standards from which to measure the actions of governments. Nations committed to behave in certain ways, and these standards provide proof when they fall short. While depressing reports from the Pew Center document how almost two-thirds of humanity live in countries that limit the free practice of faith, the Universal Declaration provides the benchmarks to measure those failures. But however significant, these declarations cannot stop the hand of the oppressor from striking the weak or block Russian tanks or close Chinese labor camps. In this darkening environment, persons of all faith and none may find solace and strength in the movements of Advent, often represented in the candles that emphasize hope, peace, joy, and love. For centuries, people waited expectantly for a Messiah, not knowing when God would come in human form. Advent reminds us of that long wait. Its rhythms encourage optimism for a day when promises are fulfilled. The Advent season teaches hope for a brighter tomorrow, which is what human rights defenders most need right now. Hope is most important in dark times. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. spoke of hope in his final Sunday sermon on March 31, 1968, days before his murder. From the pulpit at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C., he preached from Revelation 16, quoting, "Behold, I make all things new. Former things are passed away." He didn't sugarcoat the state of affairs for African Americans in the late 1960s. The civil rights movement had scored significant victories for equal rights, but much work remained. We have difficult days ahead in the struggle for justice and peace, but I will not yield to a politic of despair, Dr. King said. He stated directly, "I'm going to maintain hope." Following, he prophetically announced, "We shall overcome because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice." He did not know when that day would come, and a week later, tragedy would strike. Dr. King concluded by saying, "With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair the stone of hope." With the darkening climate for human rights and religious freedom globally, we must lean on Dr. King's wisdom and not despair, but cling to hope. Hope is powerful, especially at Christmas time. The carol, O Holy Night, speaks of the thrill of hope, exclaiming how a weary world rejoices at the break of a new and glorious morn. Christians celebrate the fulfillment of long-hoped-for promises with the birth of Christ. Hope inspires and encourages when strength begins to fail. We are in now and not yet circumstances, the dark time before the dawn. We know what's right, but wrongs keep happening. In a time of persecution, we should learn from Advent's lesson of hopeful anticipation for the arrival of better times. The Advent season can serve as a source of spiritual resilience and a reminder that even in challenging times, there is hope for a brighter future. We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. I hope you've enjoyed it and that you will listen again. I'm Mary Grace Payden, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We wish you very happy holidays, however you choose to spend those, and however you choose to worship. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.